Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
No. You don't come back in here until you've apologized to every person in this room, because you just exercised a freedom that none of these people of color have. When these people of color get tired of racism, they can't just walk out, because there's no place in this country where they aren't going to be exposed to racism. They can't even stay in their own homes and not be exposed to racism if they turn on the television. But you, as a white female, when you get tired of being judged and treated unfairly on the basis of your eye color, you can walk out that door.
That is an excerpt from the famous Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes racism experiment created by educator Jane Elliott. She's been conducting it for decades, yet it is as relevant now as it was a generation ago. Well, tonight, as part of our ongoing Black History Conversations, we're talking about the state of racism today and how it's changed. We'll be joined by educator Jane Elliott a little bit later in the program. But tonight we begin with social activist Stephen Tillett, author of the book Stop Falling for the Okey-Doke, How the Lie of Race Continues to Undermine Our Country. We're talking about this very important and very serious issue tonight. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Stephen, thanks for joining the program.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
I want to get your reaction to something that happened just in today's news. You may have heard something that I reported on just a few minutes ago about a teacher near Raleigh, North Carolina, a substitute teacher who told a predominantly minority class that their clothing, athletic wear, was a pathway to prison, that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was not assassinated in 1968, and that indeed he committed suicide, and that you are not a true Christian if you do not support Donald Trump. Aside from the astonished look on your face right now, share your thoughts about that with me if you can. What's going on here?
A complete disconnection from reality. Starting at the top, what you wear is a pathway to prison. It's a clothing choice, and your behavior will determine whether you go to prison or not. Now, obviously, there's some other factors with respect to if you were profiled or, you know, obviously the things we've been seeing in community where anything while black, walking while black, gardening while black, breathing while black, you know, but your clothes don't have anything to do with it. Second, the entire world knows Dr. King was assassinated, and there's pictorial footage of it. The third, I am offended as a Christian minister for the last 29 years. I am offended when people who call themselves Christians ally themselves with this man who does not seem to have a spiritual bone in his body. I'm not his judge. I'm not in his mind or in his heart. But just looking at his conduct and the words that come out of his mouth, I don't know why they are so attached to him. I do suspect that part of it is their obsession with abortion. It's like, well, he's a Republican, so he will appoint conservative judges. And that's all they care about. Well, two things. First, Donald Trump was a New York Democrat before he became a Republican. And I think he became a Republican because he knew the Democrats would not fall for his okey-doke and allow him to take over their party. He was able, unfortunately, to take over the Republican Party. And then second, This fascination with abortion, there was a nun who said that these people are not pro-life, they're pro-birth. Because essentially they want anything conceived to be born, no matter what, the viability, the circumstances around the surrendering the pregnancy, whether it's incest, rape, whatever, they want that child born. And then after the child is born, it's almost like, okay, Holmes, you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And whatever support the family would need, whether it's health care, Head Start, school lunches, whatever, they seem to lose interest. Mm-hmm. So nonsense, and hopefully that person is out of a job.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, she did submit her resignation this week. And yet, another story that has surfaced just this week, Churchill High School in Montgomery County, where you had students issuing permission slips to use the N-word here. It just seems that every single day we are seeing more and more signs that not only is racism continuing to thrive, but it is continuing to expand. Why?
Children learn what they live. And so, I mean, think about it, Harold. There's no reason for a child born in this millennium to have the kind of racist ideologies that some of them have, but they do because they've learned it at home. And then they bring it to school. Now, we're having the same issues in Anne Arundel County. I'm a pastor at Asbury Broadneck United Methodist Church in Annapolis. And we've had school after school where somebody, last year a teacher, in fact, called a student the N-word. And then, the family, of course, came for him and wanted him to face some discipline or whatever for that, to have a face-to-face with him. He lawyered up, played hide-and-seek for 2 weeks, and then retired on March 1st. This happened February 14th. March 1st, he's retired, so, of course, no sanctions to him. We just had an incident last week where a young lady was upset that her school lost a basketball game, and she sent out a Snapchat that I cannot repeat on air, but it cost her everything. She had to leave that school. She will not be able to play the sport that she was excelling in the spring. I don't know if she'll be allowed to participate in graduation, certainly not the school that she was just asked out of. But all of that. And I don't know why people are so fascinated with the word. Now, let's be honest. The way that kids in our community and we in our community have used the word perhaps makes people feel like they have permission. But you and I both know if we were in a room full of Jews and we were the only brothers there and they start using whatever terms they use about each other, they can do that all day. We don't have permission to do that. We're in a room full of Italians. They can do it. We can't. But it's almost as if we've granted permission through the use of music and et cetera. I mean, and this didn't just start now. My dad, born in 1924, Depression era, used to talk about how it would be a favorable thing that I might say about you. Yeah, that's Harold. That's my nigga, you know. And so that was delivered favorably.
And no, I'm not.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. But I'm saying, but that's what they would do. And so somewhere along the line, they became so comfortable using it. And maybe because it's in the music and perhaps because some of the kids who interact with each other, maybe they use it with each other, but that's a line that is crossed. And I don't know why. I understand the fascination with the word. Frankly, it's been so overused, I think it's lost some of its power.
That depends. That may be debatable. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the state of racism today and how it's changed and what is going on. If you have a comment or a question about racism in these modern times, give us a call. Again, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kay, calling from Temple Hills. Thanks for calling, Kay. What's on your mind?
Yes. I think it's our responsibility to give ourselves the gift of the knowledge of our rights and pass it on to our children, not only in the school, not only in the workplace, not, you know, only in the general public, but I think we owe it to ourselves to, like I said, give ourselves the gift of knowledge and knowing what our rights are and not being afraid to execute those rights.
Okay. Kay, thank you so much. And you know what? She said something that struck me, even as it relates to the story coming out of North Carolina. One of the reasons why this became a story was because the student who went home and told his father what the teacher said was incorrect is 10 years old. This is an elementary school student whose parents obviously have educated them, in addition to quite possibly the school system, but have educated this 10-year-old boy about what is historically accurate. And that is the thing that started this issue, which of course led to this teacher resigning, which during this Black History Month, I think it puts a fine point on why it is so important to have some true, accurate conversations about Black history, not just with our children, but with everybody.
I agree. Now, let me say, you're talking about true and accurate. So let's just look at the term race for a minute. And that's one of the things that the points that Cousin Jane, that's what a lot of us call her, Jane Elliott. Cousin Jane makes this point constantly. There's only one race. That's the human race, period. So unless you are a Vulcan, a Klingon, or a Cardassian, whatever, you're a human being. We're all the same race. We are 99.9% plus the same genetically. If you peel back this 1/64th of an inch of covering, it's all the same. I was a chaplain working in the military, the Doverport Mortuary, and anytime you heard bad news overseas, they were brought back there. And they would do an autopsy on everybody, and I can tell you, one went down there on the table, it all looks the same. But somehow we allowed ourselves to get stuck on stupid, on that less than 0.1%, rather than looking at the 99 plus and focus on the difference. And as a result, the lie that has been told about race, there is only one race. There are different ethnicities, but
and
only
cultures.
One race. Different ethnicities and cultures, true. And in some of the instances with cultures, and I make that point in my book, Stop Falling for the Okey-Doke, I talk about how if you had a white and a brown person from Mississippi and a white and brown from Boston, that the expectation would be that the two whites would get together and the two browns would get together. But the folks that have the most in common are the ones from the same area, mm-hmm. same diet, same dialect, idioms, etc., and that we are so rigidly focused on skin color that we lose the focus on humanity. And that has allowed all of us to get played. Dr. King, in his speech given at the end of the Selma to Montgomery March in 1965, spoke about the intentional creating of a wedge between brown folk and white folk.
Divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer. So you had poor white farmers and laborers, and then you had former slaves. And so when the poor whites would say, hey, we're not being paid enough, the bourbon interests, the money people, would say, hey, we'll fire you and hire the colors and pay them less. So then those groups began to come together in the populist movement. And so as Dr. King, he was schooling it during this speech. And he said, so what happens then is these political interests, the business interests say, we can't have this. So then they put the Jim Crow laws on the books, saying that you all cannot be together mm-hmm. doing anything. We won't allow it. And then they gave the white man just enough that he felt, even though I'm jacked up, I'm not quite as jacked up as they are, which is the wrong way to look at it. Because if you're both getting messed over, the idea is for you two to come together and then deal with the one that's messing you both over.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the state of racism today and how it has changed. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. James, calling from Fairfax, Virginia. James, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. And the topic of racism is not new, but I have a comment. I believe from my experiences with my children and growing up from Chicago and traveling the world, I believe that racism, I firmly am of the conviction that racism is a form of fear and ignorance. And the reason is we have come so far that we've forgotten our history and our dynasty. The world was actually ruled for over 400 years by people of color. And it was during the rise of Alexander the Great that...
James, I got to stop you right there, because I appreciate the history lesson, but I only have an hour. But I do appreciate your input in it, and as a matter of fact, I've got to jump to a break, but your point is certainly well taken about history. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking tonight about racism in America today, what it is, what it's like, how it has changed. If you are on the phone, please stay with us. Greg from Baltimore, we're going to talk to you. Karen from Maryland, we're also going to talk to you. You're next. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. But this conversation will continue on Sirius XM. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, as part of our ongoing Black History conversations, we are talking about the state of racism today and how it has changed. My guest is social activist Stephen Tillett, author of the book Stop Falling for the Okie Doke, How the Lie of Race Continues to Undermine Our Country. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, Stephen, what's the okie doke?
Before I get to that, just one thing on what James' comment was.
Yeah.
He said he thought that racism was a form of fear, and it certainly is. But
ignorance.
Yeah. But in 1959, the President's Joint Council on Mental Health in Children declared racism to be the foremost form of mental illness afflicting children in 1959.
Interesting.
And here it is still here. So it is, as children get miseducated by their parents and their grandparents, as I mentioned earlier about the things you talked about, Churchill and Raleigh, and I mentioned things happening in Anne Arundel County, and they're happening elsewhere, that people miseducate their children and put them in a position where they're not going to be able to function in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I testified at the school board last week, have just implemented a new requirement for a graduation requirement in Anne Arundel County that they have to take a global citizenship course.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
And that's a half credit, so one semester, but that's more than most of them would ever see unless they took it. Because I was telling them that what these parents are doing right now, if they're busy, if they speak Nigganese at home, mm-hmm. and the kid doesn't know how to turn it off when they cross the door seal, they're using it at the bus stop, on the bus, in school, etc. When you leave your small community and go out into the world, you won't be able to act like that, talk like that in college, in the military, or other places where you might try and get a job and function in the world. These people are preparing their children for failure. The okie doke is nonsense. It's foolishness. It's a hustle. It's a scam. It's a con. And what, if you see the image on the cover of my book, it's someone playing three card Monte. And if you've ever gone to a park or seen on a corner or whatever, they're playing three card Monte. And the card that he has lifted up is the Joker. And basically that symbolizes that all of us are getting played. This game, this okie doke is being run. Race is it's a social concept. It's not scientific. We are different ethnicities, same race, different ethnicities, as you said, different cultures, but we're all part of the human family. And when we allow ourselves to demonize people just because they don't look like us, because they have a different accent from us, they're from a different place in the world than us, than we are, that makes it easy to discount them, to dismiss them. And when you do that, all of us are kin, Harold. Everybody on this planet mm-hmm. is at most 30th cousins from anybody else on this planet.
But as I said earlier, that doesn't mean anything if I'm raised in in Prince George's County and you're raised in Mississippi or Georgia or Washington State. And I think the reality and the thing that has become so problematic is that we may be kin under the skin, but we are treated differently. We treat each other differently.
Right.
That you could argue that is one of the foundational things of the president's, or I should say, the candidate Donald Trump's foundational discussion about dealing with people who are Muslim, people who are of Hispanic descent. And so, because he's kin too, but like I said, we don't necessarily treat each other or see each other the same. And that is the thing that has become even more problematic. Let me go back to the phone lines real quick. Karen calling from Maryland. Karen, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm actually driving home, and I'm an educator.
Good.
And I heard your comment about the person, the substitute, who had the racist and the ignorant comments to the kids. This is the prime reason why we need to make sure that the substitutes are held to the same credentialing as teachers. She should not have been given the option to resign. She should have been fired on the spot. And for comments like that, that should follow her to teach her a lesson that you cannot talk to children any kind of way. Children are impressionable. We don't know the effect that those comments had on those children.
Yeah.
And as African Americans, we need to make sure that our children are rooted and rooted deeply. That when people make ignorant comments like that, they are fully prepared to respond or to tell their parents immediately so that foolishness like this does not continue to happen in our community.
Well, Karen, one of the things that I did discuss earlier is that Billy Bird's son, he knew what he was hearing was wrong. The problem is that not all children know that what they're hearing is wrong because the teacher said so.
And so one of the things that has to happen, and it used to be this way, before integration, the people who taught our children in our community were, for the most part, were African American. Now, in public schools around the country, I don't know what the private school numbers are, probably that or worse, at least between 75 and 80% of the teachers are white females.
Mm-hmm.
And then a very small percent are African American males. That if we want to take the classroom back, if you will, that means that we have to, you know, if people want to make however much money on Wall Street or whatever, perhaps you need to at least spend some time teaching in your community, pouring into somebody that looks like you. So this is your son, your nephew, your sibling, as opposed to somebody you see in the elevator, you want to clutch your purse.
Mm-hmm.
But that means we have to take that responsibility.
Yeah. Karen, thank you so much for giving us a call and sharing with us. And certainly thank you for your service in the classroom. We really appreciate it. Let's go to Greg. Greg calling from Baltimore. Greg, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, good evening. I'm calling. I'm a 55-year-old African-American man, and I've lived through racism in different phases of my life, growing up in the 60s. But I'm calling with a different perspective, and that is, I think racism has been so effective to the point that it has consumed us as African Americans. It seems like that's what we're consumed with when we talk most of the time about the issue, and we never really have any solutions. And it's taken center stage to the things just socially. That's what we're comfortable talking about a lot. I think it needs to be removed from our everyday vernacular because it's doing what it's intended to do. It's to divide us, even though you think it's uniting us. It's making us not talk about the things and doing the things in life that we should be doing. And we're so focused on it. I don't even reach out to my teenage kids because I teach them now to go around it and not talk about it because it's not a very attractive subject. At the same time, they can be you can acknowledge that it exists. But I just think that we as African Americans, we are just consumed with it, and we have to find a way to just remove it from our just everyday part of our life. In the sense that we know it's there, but Well, I mean, just talking about it, and we intellectualize it, we're good at analyzing it, and we have these talks, books, and everything, but there's no solution. And
well, do you have a solution other than just walking around it? I'll let you answer that, and then I'll get Stephen's reaction. Go ahead, Greg. What's the solution? Well, because and the reason I ask you about the solution is because it's you know, it's like that song we used to sing when we were kids. Well, you can't go under it, you can't go around it, you can't go over it, and you can't go through it. It always is there. So if that is something that is always there, how do you address that? What is your solution?
What is my most importantly, I'm spiritual, so I pray on it. You know, that's what I do. I know it's not going anywhere. It's been around since the beginning of time, and it's going to be around. And you know, when we think we're making strides, there's always something that puts us back. You know it's there. You just got to get your head around this thing some kind of way and get it, stay strong. And you just have to realize that it's a force, but there's a higher force, a spiritual force from God, and that's why we've been successful as African Americans and with civil rights and other things.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Stephen. Your thoughts about
it. So, Greg, let me say this. Jesse Jackson, when he was running for president in 1984, had an excellent statement and analogy that made it real. He said that you cannot keep someone else in the ditch unless you linger there. And so while discussing topics related to ethnicism, which is my term for racism, but mistreating people, treating people differently because of their ethnicity and the color of their skin, you can't be focused on it yourself unless you linger there. You can't keep somebody in the ditch. I'm going to keep you down, but the only way you can keep me in the ditch is if you stay here to keep me from getting out. So it's really a toxin that is poisoning the entire populace, and not just African American people. We, of course, are more conscious of the daily microaggressions and just things that we experience and see. But it's poisoning the entire country. And I would argue that until we begin to discern what our common interests are, if white people and brown people begin to understand, you know what? We are both in this particular position. We both need this. We need to join forces to make sure that we get this and go for the people who are keeping both of us from getting what we need to have for our families. But as long as we're stuck on stupid, focusing on that 1/64th of an inch, that less than 1/10 of 1%, we never get to what's really important.
Greg, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. And I was just looking for something that I had seen a lot of lately on social media, and I don't know the exact source of this, but there was an interview with James Baldwin,
mm-hmm.
and the interviewer, who was a white man with glasses, and he said, why is it that you're always focused on race? And, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but Baldwin just let him have it. You know, and essentially what he said was, I cannot escape it because I see it every day in the mirror. And then I'm reminded when I'm on the street, and I'm, you know, reminded in every house in Hamlet and everything that, in every place that I go to. And while I think the spirit of what Greg is suggesting, I think, is well meant. But you can, as was suggested in Jane Elliott's video that I played earlier, you do not have the luxury of deciding, I'm just going to leave the room or the place where racism exists and step out of the room, or into another part of the city, or another part of the county, or another part of my community where racism exists, because I'm just sick of it. And I think that the reality is that it's a very, very difficult thing. Let me go to Paul calling from Maryland. Hey, Paul, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine.
I just went to school today dealing with an issue with one of my son's teachers. He's the only African-American kid in the school, in the class, and the teacher felt comfortable to talk about the N in class.
Mm.
And for when he come home and to tell me that I need to sit down, he need to talk to me, I had an issue. You know, it gave me a flashback 45 years, 50 years ago when I first walked into the school and had to deal with race. Race is an issue in this country, and people don't understand it. They're not willing to address it. Even if you don't look like us, they don't want to address it. And the president that we got in this country right now, you know, he done made people feel so comfortable that they can bring race to the forefront and feel comfortable dealing with even in the classroom. And I made it perfectly clear when I went in there today, I'm not dealing with it then, and I'm not dealing with it now.
Good for you. I appreciate it. Paul, thank you so much. I need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about white people and racism and what they see and what they don't see and how they need to get the message. Some of them. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the state of racism today and how it has changed. I want to go back to our conversation about white people.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that came up in Anne Arundel County recently, Chesapeake Middle School, where nooses were found and the school system, the administration, was attempting to address these issues. And I was watching a TV report about it, and one of the things that really struck me was the difference between white parents and black parents. I remember one of the black parents made a comment about how this needs to be addressed. It's very distressing, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was a white parent who said, I had no idea that this was going on and that this was a problem. And I'm jumping up and down in my living room, splintering my hardwood floors and wondering, where have you been living? So why is it that even now, let us say the quote unquote well-meaning white people, I'm not talking about those that are marching with tiki torches and pitchforks and the like in Charlottesville, the ones that are blatantly and openly racist. But why is it that some white folks seem to be ignorant, I would argue even willingly ignorant of these things? What's going on?
Well, if it doesn't affect you personally, a lot of times you can turn a blind eye to it. For instance, some of the macro and microaggressions that women face every day, and we as men don't see it. For instance, in the election of 2016, it never, Harold, occurred to me that Hillary Clinton, being a woman, could be a hindrance to people voting for her. And when I shared that with women, they laughed. They're like, you got to be kidding. Well, that's the same way that we respond when there will be folks that say, I never knew that, you know, African-Americans or Latinos or whomever were dealing with this. And we laugh. It's like, where have you been? But I remember,
not with African-Americans and Latinos.
Right. But I remember a film clip with Jane Elliott where she asked an audience. She says, and the audience was just about all white. I want everyone in here who would be satisfied, who would be willing to be treated as your citizens, fellow citizens of African descent are treated, to stand up. Nobody stood. She says, no, you didn't understand the question. If you're willing to be treated the way black folks are treated, please stand up. And then she said, nobody's standing. That tells me that you know there's a problem. My question to you is why it is that you're willing to allow it to continue. And so Jane Elliott, frankly, was one of the original woke white folks.
Mm-hmm.
She And I don't know when it started exactly, other than right in the wake of Dr. King's assassination in 1968, when she initiated the blue eye, brown eye exercise with her class in rural Iowa, probably all white. And what she had them do was the kids with blue eyes got to be dominant for a half a day or a day, then the kids with brown eyes got to be dominant for a half day or a day. And so they got to treat the folks the way the dominant culture might, and the others basically had to take it. And she talked about in her research how that really changed for that day, for that time, how the kids who had been confident and forthcoming prior to this exercise, and then they became, you know, very quiet and withdrawn and angry and other things of that nature, just to get them to understand. The problem is that even with that trying to wake them up moment, community got angry, and she talks about how hard it has been on her family, her four children. They had to change schools. They had to move. You know, her husband was fully supportive of her in this work. And so now here she is, God bless her, at age 85. She's been on the battlefield for a half century, for 50 years. And looking around, because she said yesterday, I thought after the election of Barack Obama, we were good. I thought we're heading in the right direction.
That post-racial America.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that she was that.
Not
deluded.
Her, but
right.
Yeah. Sure.
But that we were heading in the right direction. But I don't know if you read the piece that Charles Blow wrote in the New York Times a few weeks back, where the piece was entitled "The Worst White Man." And if you have ever heard the quote from LBJ, if you can convince the lowest white man that he's better than the best colored man, you won't have to steal from him. You won't have to pick his pockets. Hell, give him somebody to look down on, and he'll give his money to you. And so he talked about how all of the positive attributes of President Obama, and now we have this. So you've gone from, quote, the best colored man to, quote, the worst white man. And I'm just troubled that people were so disturbed at having a brown face and a brown family in the White House that they would turn to this. And if they only knew that President Obama wasn't even the first person with African blood in the White House. He was the seventh.
Okay.
Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, two of them on Mount Rushmore.
But we're not talking about biracial people, and I think that is
Obama.
No, I'm talking about before Obama. I'm talking about the seven.
Yes.
Yeah, which goes back to kinfolk that we were talking about.
Right.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Jesse from Florida. Thanks for hanging on, Jesse. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Fisher, sir. I had a question. With so many African Americans saying to buy black, to invest in the black economy, my question is, do you believe that desegregation was a great benefit to the African American community or a detriment?
That's a really good question. What do you think about that, Stephen?
Honestly, and I hate to have to say it, it was a benefit to a few, and it's been a detriment to many. Whether it's education and our children not being taught by folks who feel like they have a personal stake in them, to our communities, as we were able to move to other communities, then that eliminated some level of aspiration. It's like, well, I see this doctor here, this lawyer here, this teacher here, that they moved out. And what was left, unfortunately, has not helped us to aspire to the best that we can be. So I honestly, regretfully, I think that it has overall been a negative for our community.
Jesse, thank you so much for your question. An excellent question. In the last couple of minutes, what do you believe is the solution for addressing modern racism going forward?
I think that we have to begin to look for people of common interest and common concern. Look for allies wherever we can find them. Look for allies in uncommon places, and help people understand that we will only, all of us, struggling white people, struggling brown people, that we will only begin to change our circumstance if we come together. As long as we continue to beef over that 1/64th of an inch skin covering, we will not be focusing on the real problem. As long as folks are lingering by the ditch to keep folks in, we're all by the ditch. I mean, think about it. Some of the states with the lowest rankings and everything, lowest education, highest poverty, lowest health.
Mississippi, Arkansas, parts of Louisiana.
Those are states that have assiduously done their very best to keep anything good from happening in the African-American community. And as a result, it's the entire doggone state and how it is reflected. And so the poor and struggling white people need to look around and say, you know what? This quote white thing isn't really working out for me that well, because I'm just maybe a half step above where the brown people are. Maybe if we get together, because he's messed up in these areas of his life, so am I. Maybe if we get together, you know, I'm not saying your son has to marry his daughter. I don't care about that. But maybe if we get together with our common interest and common concern, we can begin to turn the tide and make a difference. But that means we have to stop being stuck on stupid, stop falling for the okey-doke, stop mm-hmm. looking at just skin color, and look for allies wherever we can find them.
Stephen Tillett, thank you so much. I want to make sure that if you want information about the book, as always, we'll be posting on the website and other contact information for Stephen Tillett and his book, Stop Falling for the Okey-Doke, How the Lie of Race Continues to Undermine Our Country. All that information will be on our website on WHUR.com after 9 o'clock tonight. Stephen, thank you so much. We apologize for not being able to get Jane Elliott on the program. We will continue to make those efforts, and hopefully we can chat with her again. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, February 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.